This is editor and producer of Talking to Grandma, Rebecca De Leon, and we are back with another episode. Earlier this season, you got to hear Vettel's story of language loss and preservation. And as we start year two of our work with the Language Preservation Project, we want to share the stories of some of the other amazing folks we have worked with over the past year, who not only have a passion for language preservation, but who have a story of their own. The work we do is truly by us and for us. In this episode, Vettel talked with Jen Pressman and Irene Vergara about making connections to language through little moments, food, and music. Jen is a language preservation specialist with the Language Preservation Project, and she supports us with the curriculum, design, elicitation, and really, all the things. She is also the director and teacher of a place-based program in Denver, Colorado, called Programa Familiar de Lenguaje, a program that empowers Latinx families with children 5 and under to be their child's first teachers, strengthening bonds and building language through books, songs, and games. She is a parent and educator, passionate about health, culture, and nature. Her journey has taken her from New York to Virginia and now to Denver, Colorado, where she lives with her family.
Thanks for being here with us today. We're excited to have this chat. We talk about language preservation a lot within our team, but now we're going to have this publicly and bring people into kind of who we are and what our experiences are. So Jen, can you tell us a little bit about what your experience has been with language preservation and or loss growing up?
Sure. I'm the daughter of two Colombian immigrants, and I remember as a kid being spoken to in Spanish and responding in Spanish up until I think it became an issue to me as a kiddo when my younger brother, around the time that my younger brother was born, I'm one of three and I'm the middle one and the only girl. And we're 5 years apart. I remember, I think it was around the time that maybe my younger brother was starting school and that there's just a lot more English happening in the household. And as a kiddo, I was not okay with that. You know, my mom is very proud to share this story that I made sure everybody knew I wasn't okay with it. And I proposed to the family having Spanish Sundays in order to just like keep it up, which is crazy because I have absolutely no recollection of that. But now knowing my personality as an adult can totally see that happening. And so I don't know how effective it was, you know, because I think as I was reflecting about it on it, and I very much associate Spanish with like speaking to my abuelitas, you know, and like speaking to like some of my tios and sometimes not, but it was never a language I really used with my brothers, you know, and it would, and with my parents, even now as an adult, you know, I had to like come full circle and start speaking Spanish to them again, because English just became, I somehow took over. So it's been this wonderful kind of journey where that we've all taken together and, you know, are now kind of re-embracing the value it has in our family unit.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you had like a positive relationship to the language then? It sounds like you had like positive associations with it. You valued it from a young age.
You know, having grown up in New York for the earlier part of my life, it just seemed very relevant, for lack of a better word, right? You know, in New York, you heard it all the time. And there was, you know, there was Colombian restaurants and, you know, all, you know, you could go to a restaurant and use your Spanish to order. And our niñera like only spoke Spanish. I think from an early age, like I didn't even think about its value because it was inherent, right? Like I used it automatically. The time that I think it became this big, so even though we weren't speaking at home, there was always still a use for it, right? Like I needed it to speak to my abuela, or we used it at the restaurant, or, you know, it was a family thing. But then when I realized that that was not necessarily true in all scenarios when we moved to Richmond, Virginia. I love Richmond.
Different.
Yeah, yes. It's a great place now, but it's very different now. And, you know, I remember having those like, it was very jarring experience moving down there. And I had never seen myself as like a brown kid. And all of a sudden I was a brown kid because everybody was white, right? So by contrast, I was very brown. And even though we were English speaking, you know, that the, like my parents' accent, like all of a sudden I noticed it more, you know, the fact that my dad is fluent in Spanglish, you know, like stood out more. And like, as a teenager, I was like, Dad, you know, we're now, you know, I've come full circle and I'm like, oh, I love that, you know? So, you know, it was not until we kind of moved and were kind of plopped into a different scenario that it really stood out to me as, like that it didn't only have a beneficial side, but then there was kind of this, you know, I felt like, I don't know, a different feeling around it, you know, like it made me stand out as different, and that different didn't always feel good.
Yeah. Yeah. Are there any lessons that you had growing up around growing up bilingually and the kind of ins and outs that you had with your heritage language that you use now as an educator and mother?
You know, there's something about the association that I have with language and its connection to like how I correlated that to like my abuelita and my family. And like connecting me to the past that now as an adult, I really value, because I think, you know, we're on these journeys to become these individuals and we're working so hard to be different from our parents and be our own person, but we can't really deny where we came from. You know, it's such a big part of us. And I think that by actually embracing that, we can more fully become who we're intended to be. You know, I think kind of having had that experience myself, you know, I try to for me, it's become really important for Spanish and the value of not just the language, right, but our culture, to be part of what, you know, the girls are just getting all the time. And I think, you know, as much as it may translate as nagging sometimes and not just nagging my kids, right? Like nagging my mom, like, Mom, talk to them in Spanish, you know? But at the same time, like, I feel like I'm that person right now where I'm like, no, I'm not ready to let go of that, you know, because if I let go, then I feel like we may not be able to get it back later. Right. And so I think that, I've found myself as, in this role, as I know that we've discussed before, right. In this role of like the maintainer, of that part of our being, you know, our hilos, right. of who we are. And you know, I my younger brother didn't have language, the Spanish growing up, you know, he kind of, I think barely took it in high school. And now as an adult is kind of kicking himself for not having it because he sees kind of the advantage. And I try to be really transparent with my daughters, be like, you know, it's better to have it and not use it than not have it and then one day need it, right? It's going to be so much harder for you. Like it's like so many things, right? And so we, you know, and I feel really fortunate to be in a relationship where my partner, you know, supports that. He is not Hispanic and he is right there alongside us in that journey. You know, he reads to them in Spanish, you know, he engages with them in Spanish, you know, and it's nice to have that support and that joint importance.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so important to have that support. Especially when you are the one that like speaks the heritage language and your partner may not, it can feel like a whole nother job on top of being a parent to try to like promote this language that isn't the majority language in your community. And so many things that you said like sparked so many thoughts for me. I feel like we have similar journeys in a lot of ways in terms of like our relationship to our heritage language, but I actually didn't grow up speaking the language and was able to retain it as an adult and almost felt like I didn't have permission to do that. Like, oh, when you're an adult, right, you speak your languages that you speak and that's that. And we don't see ourselves as like language learners in the way that children do. And I think that's also sometimes a little bit limiting for ourselves to be like, you know, okay, well, that part of it is lost and gone. And I wish I learned it when I was younger. But there is still the ability to learn languages when you're older. It's a lot harder, so much easier when you're younger. But that part of it is there, and it unlocks a whole different relationship with your culture. I think there's a lot of sometimes gatekeeping around Latinidad when you're like, oh, if you don't speak Spanish, then this will be gone and this and that. And I definitely never felt like I needed that to be Latina enough, but speaking the language now does deepen my relationship in a way that it hadn't before. And I appreciate the language for that.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think from a professional standpoint, you know, in the community outreach work that I do, you know, I have come to learn, you know, over the past, whatever, 15 to 20 years, like how valuable of an asset it is to be able to use my language, you know, and how grateful I am that I didn't just take it for granted and let it, you know, and that I am actually putting it to use. Because I think for monolingual Spanish speakers, right, to be able to connect from a resource standpoint, you know, and from a place of creating community, you know, I think it opens up a lot of doors. And, you know, my daughters and I engage in those conversations a lot where they have a lot of friends who speak both, you know, are simultaneous bilinguals and speak both English and Spanish. And I'm like, girl, I tell them often, girls, I get it. You know, sometimes it's our, you know, we think faster in one language than the other, and that's okay. And mm-hmm. we should honor, right, that like, because we do have this gift, like it allows us to connect with somebody who maybe we couldn't if we only spoke English. And, you know, I think we're really fortunate currently in our community that we have those friends and those classmates that remind us on a day-to-day basis, be like, oh, well, thank goodness I can speak Spanish so that I could, you know, ask so-and-so to play with me on the playground, or, you know, share what I did over the weekend with so-and-so, you know, like kind of grounding it for them as an access to communication and connection, because that is a common, like that's a commonality that we have as humans, right? Like we always want to be able to connect. And so it's just expands our ability to connect with people even more.
Yeah. Yeah. Those kind of authentic experiences are so important for kids, for them to feel motivated to use a language, see it as relevant and useful, right? I think we can, like, as parents so many times tell them it's important because of X, Y, and Z, but unless it's relevant and useful in the immediate, like, present, it can feel really hard to be motivated to use a language that isn't the majority language of your community. Tell me a little bit about your experiences promoting bilingualism in early childhood settings as an educator, and then also being a mother, obviously, of early childhood children who are now going into older childhood. But was there any differences in how you were in the classroom versus how you were at home? And what lessons have you learned from kind of taking on those two roles?
That's a great question. I think the dual role of being an educator and being a parent has just kind of highlighted for me that it's hard. It's really hard. It's a lot of work. And now, like, so much of the work that I do comes from this place of empathy and from this place of grace. And I try to share that with parents, you know, because I'm like, I get it. Parenting, period, is hard. Now, you know, we're like adding this layer of complexity by really dedicating to raising our children bilingual. I mean, it's so challenging. And so, you know, I think as an educator, I learned that you have to recognize your limits, right? Give your, like I said, give yourself grace. And so it was really easy for me when I had one kiddo, right? And I was on maternity leave and all I had to do was just like love on this baby. Sure, the Spanish was flowing, right? It's just, I mean, of course, ay, mi amorcito, bebé linda, you know, all the loving words that come back to you.
Yeah.
But then it's like, I mean, my kiddos are 2 years apart. And so the big one was still little when I had the second one. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you're, you know, there's greater factors of like stress and like lack of sleep. And you're like, wow, you know, and mm-hmm. it just becomes a more challenging, the same as an educator, right? Like, and both of children and of teachers is like, and of adults is, you know, is recognizing when, like, doing what you can do with integrity, right? And then giving yourself grace to kind of ease up on the rest, you know? And so I tell a lot of parents, it's a lot, you know, especially if we're making a concerted effort initially to talk to our child in Spanish, you know, decide like, well, when does it come most naturally and when is it less stressful? Then mm-hmm. let's focus on that, you know? Yeah. You know, and in the classroom, you know, I've taught in a dual language classroom. And for us, it was like a hat switch thing, you know, because mm-hmm. we just kind of need that permission to be like, okay, wait, let's ground down, make sure we're all understanding each other. So I think, you know, one of the things that I'm still practicing is that grace, because, you know, I think just the dedication to raising our children bilingual is an amazing, amazing feat in and of itself. You know, I think trying to getting hung up on perfection or doing it a specific yeah. way is just going to take the joy out of it, which kind of defeats the purpose.
Words of wisdom. I'm going to ask you for a few more words of wisdom, just reflecting on your experiences thus far. Do you have any suggestions or recommendations for parents or educators out there that they can use when things get really difficult?
And they will get really difficult, right? Like when they get difficult. Mm-hmm. And I think bringing it back to whatever that a habit of connection is, you know, even if it's just like right before bed, what are some like loving words or a book or a song that you guys can sing to ground yourself in that like love, and also associate that, the, you know, Spanish or whichever the language may be with a language as a language of love, mm. right? So then those are the feelings that are always felt, you know, and that resonate most, like highest when speaking that language. And so, you know, I think about my daughters and I mean, we're switching all day, you know, and I feel really fortunate they go to a dual language school. So I give them a lot of the responsibility at this point. But at night, you know, my little one says to me, you know, because it's our inside joke, but instead of night, night, she says to me, okay, mommy, noche, noche, you know, and I'm like, you know, and just being able to have those things that like resonate. So then, you know, maybe when they're teenagers or college students and off doing their own thing, mm-hmm. you can just like call each other, text each other and be like, noche, noche. And it brings you back mm-hmm. to the emotion tied mm-hmm. to that.
Beautiful. Jen, I didn't know it that you were going to take me to church today, but you did. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with me, with our guests, with everybody listening. Where can people find more information about you and the work that you do? And we know that you do work for the Language Preservation Project, but you also have a whole nother project that you work on that also promotes bilingualism in the U.S.
Yes. I'm the director and the teacher of a Denver-based program called Programa Familiar de Lenguaje. And we work with predominantly Spanish-speaking families with kiddos 0 to 5. And the idea is really to strengthen bond between child and adult in order to develop language. So, you know, it's bond first and then comes the language. And so more information on that program can always be found on Facebook, just searching Programa Familiar de Lenguaje or Instagram. And we are currently revamping our website to have that accessible.
Exciting. Thank you so much, Jen. It was a pleasure talking to you today.
Thank you.
Next up, we hear from Irene, who is our go-to gal from finance to social media. Originally from Venezuela, her parents protested and took part in the gas strike during the Chavez regime, which led to the 2003 public firing of 18,000 employees, including her dad. The worry of a political witch hunt brought her dad to take a job as an expat, and so her international journey began at the young age of 10. She is now 27 and has lived in Bolivia, Argentina, Trinidad and Tobago, Switzerland, Mexico, and now Peru. We are excited to hear more about this journey. Welcome to the show.
What excites you about being featured on our podcast?
Well, for me, it's just really exciting to meet people who have had probably similar journeys to mine in the sense with like language. Since I've moved around so much, sometimes the whole thing of like culture and your roots might be a little bit complicated. So getting to know people that have had this maybe like similar struggles or being proud of being Latinos, even though maybe we weren't like 100% raised in our countries, working in like the preservation of her language. It's something that I'm really passionate about too.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about what that was like for you growing up in so many different contexts. I'm interested because I am raising two children that are like at least bicontinental in terms of us going in between Europe and the Americas. And so what was that like for you?
Honestly, for me, it's been great. I hope that everyone gets to experience like living abroad, at least for a semester abroad or something like that. Growing up, like it was definitely a little bit harder because of the conditions in my country. Like it wasn't as easy to like go back and forth. Just being away from my grandparents probably was the hardest in a time that we didn't have like video calls or WhatsApp or all of that. Because we moved away 17 years ago, we had to send them like pictures, like printed of like us and everything. And just, we went through like all of like the ways of communicating, like phone calls. There was a time that there were like these phones that you paid and it was like connected to the internet to try to have like phone calls with our grandparents. And then being exposed to a bunch of like different cultures, like also really opens your mind, because I was like in international schools. So I was with like different Latino kids, Americans, then there was just like more Europeans, Africans, just like, I feel like cultures that I would have never been in touch if I would have stayed in Venezuela my whole life. Just being away since the age of 10, and the longest country I've ever lived in was for like 5 years. I call myself a third culture kid, because like, I feel like I, as much as my parents are Venezuelan, like after a while, I feel like, am I really Venezuelan? You know what I mean? Like it's complicated.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about what that means to you, a third culture kid, because I think a lot of our listeners may not have been third culture kids, or maybe they are, but they also might be raising third culture kids. So what does that mean? And what does that mean for some of your experiences?
From what I've read and like how I define it, my parents are both Venezuelan, but they raised my sister and me in different cultures and different environments than from the one they're from. So as much as in my household, we continue with like all of like the traditions from Venezuela. Like in December, we made hallacas and we listened to the typical like music and everything. Outside of my house, it was a complete like different context. And then in school, it was more like American based. So like I have an appreciation to all cultures. I feel like for me, I'm going to continue to carry the Venezuelan culture, but there are a lot of things from other cultures that I've learned to appreciate, and things that I feel like exposes you to different values that maybe in your house they don't really have.
Mm-hmm. Your language learning journey started from a younger age. As you mentioned, you've kind of been in international schools for a while. You moved out of Venezuela from a young age. What was that like for you? You learned Spanish first and then English. Yeah. What was that like for you to learn English? And at what point did you feel like you were, you know, fully fluent in the language?
Well, I think it happens like for you guys, maybe the other way around. Like in Venezuela, they taught us English in school, but it was at a very like basic level. So when I moved to Bolivia, that was the first place that we moved to, that it was an international school. I remember my teacher like asking me in English, like, do you speak, how's your English? And I went like sort of, kind of. And then when the classes started, I realized like, okay, I did not speak English like at all. Because the classes just turned like history lessons, like even math in Spanish is the other way around, like divisions and subtractions and all of that. So it was just relearning how to like do math, relearning like history, like everything, like even the PE classes, I was really confused. Like the words were completely the opposite, but it was really interesting. And I feel like especially from my parents' perspective, growing up in like monolingual, like they only spoke Spanish most of their lives. For them, it was really important for me and my sister to learn at least another language, because it really opened the doors for us, like for jobs, for education, for like the world. And they both pushed us to learn English in school, but always like when we went back to like back home, they always pushed us to speak in Spanish because my sister's a little bit younger than me. So like, obviously for her, it started becoming more comfortable to speak English rather than Spanish. But they always like try to like push us to speak Spanish, especially because of our grandparents as well, that they don't speak English at all. And when I realized I was like fully at this point, like bilingual, was when I went to like college, that I would spend weeks not speaking Spanish at all, because most of like my classmates, they spoke English and classes were completely in English. I went to school in Switzerland and I did not speak French, but like going out, I had to speak English as well. And when I would speak to my mom, I would be like, whoa, this is weird, like changing the language again. So yeah, it was then when I realized like, okay, I'm fully bilingual. And then with my sister, we speak in Spanglish. Like we go like back and forth mm-hmm. with like the words that we talk.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so interesting too, that your parents, you mentioned, are monolingual Spanish, but they encourage bilingualism from an early age. I think sometimes parents are like, well, I don't speak the language, and so I can't raise bilingual children. But it's really kind of your parents had a strategy in terms of how they were going to raise bilingual children mm-hmm. by exposing you to schools that were bilingual, and then at home maintaining the Spanish language there so that there could be that connection and development in that Spanish language.
Yeah.
That sounds like an amazing bilingual journey, but did you face any struggles growing up being bilingual, and what did that feel like? And did you ever like push back against the bilingual journey?
Yeah, I definitely faced some challenges. Even now, like I feel like sometimes I don't know the word in English or I don't know the word in Spanish. It's mostly the other way around. Like for me, it's just like I know the word in English and then I want to say it in Spanish. And I'm just like, you know, because like I read in English, I watch Netflix shows in English, like most of my friends speak English. And then like when I'm talking to my Spanish speaking friends, like I've gotten so used to being like Spanglish that sometimes trying mm-hmm. to find that word. And then for kids that are either third culture kids or expats or maybe kids that are in the military, my accent, at least in Spanish, is sometimes very neutral. So like one of the struggles for me was just like going back to Venezuela and people asking me like, where are you from? And then being in Bolivia, in Peru, in Trinidad and Tobago, in Spain, and they'd be like, where are you from? And it's like, mm-hmm. at this point, I don't know anymore, you know?
Yeah. That's so interesting. So you have a neutral Spanish accent.
Yeah. Like sometimes I feel like sometimes it does, like, especially when I spend too much time with Venezuelans, I feel like I pick it up like a little bit. But most of the time, especially like learning English in Venezuela, like the V and the B, we pronounce it the same. So like for us, we say like Venezuela instead of Venezuela. But learning mm-hmm. English and Spanish, like, well, not learning Spanish, but speaking to other Spanish speaking people, I had to learn to like properly pronounce like B and V for very like communication.
Yeah.
Same with the S. Like a lot of times, like in Venezuela, we don't pronounce the S's in like some words. So just like over pronouncing them and learning how to pronounce them. So I feel like it just drove me further away from the accent.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel similarly, interestingly, with my accent, my like Texas accent. Yeah. I definitely have an American accent. Nobody will doubt what, you know, maybe they're like, oh, you could be from Canada.
Yeah.
But I don't have a strong Texas accent, which I think it was stronger growing up or when I was like living in Texas. But now it's quite neutral.
Yeah. And did you ever learn Danish, or are you in the process of learning?
I'm in the process. Long, slow. I hope my husband isn't listening to this. He's going to hold me accountable. It's a long, slow process. Yeah, I think my process of learning Danish is really interesting when I think about language learning, because so much of language learning is grounded in two things, I think, motivation and necessity.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have very high levels of either in Danish, which is very sad. I'm trying to get more of the motivation, but I have very little necessity because everybody there speaks English.
Yeah.
So you can totally get by just speaking English. And in our household in Denmark, I only speak Spanish to my children or English. And because Danish is a dominant language, I don't really, you know, respond when they speak to me in Danish. I say that I don't understand. And then they have the necessity to, you know, go into their language repertoire and either get the English or Spanish word. And so now I'm starting to understand a lot more Danish because I hear it all the time. And I still find myself like in our home kind of pretending a little bit to my kids saying, I don't know what you're saying. You have to tell me in Spanish or English, which has worked, but I don't think it's very sustainable. I need to learn the language mm-hmm. in order to communicate fully with my in-laws.
Yeah.
They don't speak Spanish. They don't speak any Spanish, but they don't speak English so well. So we get by with very basic conversation. And that I think is my motivation to kind of like deepen the relationship there.
Yeah. For me, like I think I mentioned it a while ago, like my cousins, they were born and raised in the US and my uncles never like pushed them to learn Spanish. So seeing like them struggling speaking to my grandparents or like when they were little, they didn't want to speak to them because they were just like, I don't understand what this woman is saying. I haven't seen her in years. Like, why should I care to like make the effort? And I understand that my uncles also wanted to learn themselves English. So it was easier to speak English in the household. So like everyone would practice English in the household, but I feel like they neglected the Spanish at home. So I know that struggle that it's just like, for me, it's great to speak English, but maybe for like the children, it wasn't like the greatest. Cause now I feel like they're monolingual as well.
Yeah. I think that was definitely my situation growing up where my parents were, I've mentioned this before, like it was their first language, but they were punished in school for speaking mm-hmm. Spanish. And I think just then like not having their Spanish as developed and having to use English in professional context and viewing English as the language of success in the United States, that they, you know, we kind of grew up in a monolingual household. My parents used Spanish when they didn't want us to understand what they were saying or when they were yelling at us. Like, you know, it's like their most comfortable language. Yeah. So that's like when we would get it when we were in trouble, it was all in Spanish. So when I'm raising my children, it's also like the most natural Spanish for me is like the you're in trouble Spanish, but I like need to expand my repertoire for that. And also similarly, didn't have like a very deep relationship with my grandmother because mm-hmm. she only spoke Spanish and we only like could talk on the basic level of like, you know, food and, you know, basic needs type of stuff. And then when I learned the language, when I became older, it like unlocked this whole different world and relationship and stories and history and, you know, part of my background and where I come from. And I think for a long time, I felt like angry at my parents for not teaching me the language, but I also had to recognize the context that they were in and the situation that they were in that had them raise us in that kind of English dominant environment. So, and I will say it's never too late to learn a language. So if your, you know, cousins get to a point where they're like, I want to, you know, connect more or be able to access this side, that's there for all of us.
I really hope so. The other day I started working on like a family tree and I started sending it to like my uncles and my cousins, like, because I feel like similar to Spanish, especially in South America, when especially like in like old times, like a lot of my great grandfather, for example, he had more than one wife or more than one woman to say. So a lot of times like the last names get lost in like the as the years go by. And now that three of my grandparents have passed away, just like now trying to like find out what was the name of their parents, nobody remembers. So I had to like go back and like look for it and everything. And I hope this like this research, because I started asking some uncles, some like cousins, some like uncles from my grandparents and like all of this, I hope that this like unifies everyone on like at least on that side, maybe.
yeah. Yeah. Oh, what a beautiful project and gift.
It's really nice. I even found my grandmother's birth certificate, the one that passed away, and I sent it to my aunt, and she like teared up and everything because like it was something that was completely lost.
Oh, wow. That's so beautiful. Irene, it's been such a pleasure like working with you. You've been with us since the launch of the Language Preservation Project. And I was so excited when we met and we were, you know, first moment that we talked, I said, you have to be on the team and support. I think you felt similarly. Why were you so excited about the work of the Language Preservation Project and what we're doing here?
Like I said, it's just something that really excites me, just like getting to know like new cultures. And I've never lived in the US, but I feel very connected precisely because I've been in international schools and I have a lot of friends in the US. We have similar stories, maybe the other way around, like just like I learned Spanish and then English, but like the whole part of like the culture for me, it's something that I really want to keep, even though like I left Venezuela 17 years ago and like I don't really have another like home other than Venezuela, and I haven't visited in like 5 years either. For me, just like preserving my culture, preserving my language and all of that, those are values that my mom like always tried to keep like in the house. And for me to be able to work in something that continues my mom's like journey and my journey to like other people and help other people also like identify to maybe just like having a little bit maybe of like an identity crisis with like all of that and find like refuge in us and other people, like building this community of like multilingual expats, like heritage language, like all of us just together. It's just, it's a nice to like build like a family kind of.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for being a part of this family. As we kind of close out, I wonder if you have any thoughts or advice for people who are third culture kids or people who are raising third culture children.
For us, the kids, I feel like don't be afraid to go up to your parents or your grandparents and just ask all the questions that you might have. For parents, I feel like for me, the way to connect with me, it was through food. So like for my mom to teach me how to like cook like Venezuelan dishes and all of that was something that really connected me to that. And then for my sister, it was the music. And my mom, like she kept trying to find ways to keep us connected because I feel like for my sister, she does not like cooking. And I feel like if my mom made her cook, she would have been like, no, I hate it. I don't want to be Venezuelan if I have to make hallacas every single like December. And I feel like it's just that trying to find a way to like at least keep something from our culture, like something that you feel passionate about. You also connect with like your parents and your ancestors, you know, like my mom's like recipes are something that my great grandma taught my grandma and all of that. And with the music, it's something that my granddad was really passionate about. He was a musician. So like, I like the music as well because it reminds me of my grandfather. And I feel like it's a way, a great way to keep us connected to our home country.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Irene, for joining us today.
Talking to Grandma is owned by the Language Preservation Project and sponsored by Onward. Rebecca De Leon is our editor and producer. The artwork for Talking to Grandma was created by Nancy Guevara. And I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides. We love hearing from you. Email us at hello@thelanguageproject.co, slide into our DMs on Instagram at Talking to Grandma, and remember, please subscribe or follow us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you are listening right now. Help us grow our community and reach more families and educators by sharing this podcast or leaving a review. See you next episode.